Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome back to another episode of Open Floor. I'm Rohan Narkani, joined today by my good friend, Sports Illustrated senior writer and New York Times bestselling author of the book Blood in the Garden, Chris Herring. Chris, how's it going, my man?
What's good, my G? How are you?
If I wanted you to text Spike Lee right now and was like, hey, man, when you put Chaya Chaya in the opening credits of Inside Man, that was a huge moment for my people. I'm not saying I want you to do it, but you could do it, right?
I could do it. He probably wouldn't respond right away. I'm pretty sure he's working right now. What day is it? He's probably teaching a class right now. I came out to a class he was teaching at NYU. It was on a Thursday, like right around this time. So he's probably in his office right now getting ready to sit and watch movies with the students. But once he's out, he would get back to me when he could.
There we go.
I imagine.
He put like a super popular Hindi song in front of Inside Man. And I went to the theater and I was like, what's going on? This is crazy.
I'm going to watch it again. I kind of remember that just very, very briefly. But those opening scenes from Inside Man are super memorable. I love that movie. Now you're making me want to watch it again.
Movie rips, dude. Yeah, I've rewatched it like 3 or 4 times this year, and now it's all I think about when we talk.
What's the name of the dude that always gets mad when we spend the first 2 minutes of the podcast not talking about basketball?
Daryl Swenson. Yeah,
he's gonna like pimp slap you at some point, like guaranteed. Like he comes across you on the street, like guaranteed, or me for that matter.
Yeah,
probably more likely me.
Yeah. Chris, I know that there's a lot of basketball stuff we want to get to today. Just want to shout out your Michigan Wolverines. Speaking of pimp slaps, just absolutely taking it to Ohio State in Columbus. Nothing is better than beating your rival on the road. Like, it's cool when you're at home and you get to see it, but on the road, just absolutely thrilling. I cannot even imagine how just disgustingly buck you were getting in New Orleans watching that game.
Man, my girlfriend and I, shout out to her for, you know, like getting ready pretty early that day. We were sleeping in after, after that Friday night. And, it was pouring rain in New Orleans. So it was like, okay, how do we dress for this? And also it was like, all right, so you're getting ready. And, you know, women oftentimes, I won't say all the time, but oftentimes take their time getting ready. So she's like, all right, I'll be ready by 11. I'm like, can you be ready by like 10:45 so that we can like get somewhere by the time the game starts? And then I'm trying to think like which places will have TVs. You know, believe it or not, there aren't like a ton of sports bars. There are obviously places you can go, but you want to be somewhere that you can sit for like 3.5 hours.
Right.
For a game, not just like a horrible place. And French Quarter is not always smelling the greatest. So anyway, the only place I knew of was a place that we had brunch earlier in the week. So I'm like, okay, we're going to go back there. If it means we have to have the same meal twice, whatever. And we went, and I was acting an entire fool because the thing is, no one expected Michigan. Like, maybe some people thought or expected that they could win, but not by 22 points on the road with four touchdowns of 45 yards or more, three of whatever it was, 65 or more. I will say this, though. I'm extremely proud of them, happy for them, was giving thought to going to the title game this week, the conference title game this weekend in Indianapolis. Literally 2 minutes before this podcast, there's a story breaking about one of their star players, a guy that will get drafted, presumably, who apparently got arrested in October, and there was just no news of it, and maybe it was sealed, and he did not sit out any games, which it's really difficult. I'll say this, and then I'll, like, log off. But as I was reading that, I'm just thinking about, like, how Michigan football, along with maybe Desus and Merrill while they lasted, were, like, the only two things that I felt, like, unbridled joy about from, like, a fandom standpoint, and how much it sucks, even with that. Just, like, to – you want to have, like, a moral faith and belief and ethical faith and belief in things. And it's, like, even – football, obviously football, but, like, even the thing, you know, I have one or two things in my life that I'm like that about outside of my family, outside of the people I care most about. And it's like, those things will occasionally let you down too. And it really sucks. Yeah. Even from a high like that, it's like, should this guy even be playing on felony gun charges? And the answer is probably no, obviously innocent until proven guilty, but it's pretty frustrating to read that, which all you know, obviously allows people to call into question the character of the program, the coaches, the people that run the school, all sorts of stuff. That, like, Michigan's coach was sitting there calling for Michigan State's players to be essentially charged.
Yeah,
and they did get charged in big numbers. I think seven of them. You have someone on your own roster that had felony gun charges, and you didn't sit him out at all, not even once. This happened the day before a game in October. So it's a bad look. Anyway, frustrated about that. But anyway, let's move on before what's his name slaps us off.
Yeah. I'm glad you got to get it off your chest. Listen, anytime you peel back the layers of something like college athletics, there's often not a lot of good things.
A lot of rotten things in there.
Yeah, going on. But a lot I want to get to on today's show. I want to start talking about a team that you and I actually both incidentally wrote about this week. We didn't talk about this. You wrote about them in your newsletter, which I deeply encourage everyone to subscribe to, The Playmaker. I literally, like, it comes in my inbox and I'm like, hell yeah, new herring just dropped.
Thanks, man. Appreciate you.
You wrote about the Miami Heat. You wrote about them being kind of one of the more confounding teams so far this season. I had a story come out yesterday that I really hope everyone gets a chance to check out before the season. Flew down to Miami to interview Bam Adebayo and Eric Spoelstra and Udonis Haslam, just about kind of the expectations for Bam this season and the pressure that's put on him from the outside to kind of be a better scorer. You know, the gist of the story is Bam does everything for the Heat. It's not just scoring. At the same time, he has worked on that part of his game, and I think he's becoming kind of the player people have hoping for him to be, which is just a consistent 20-point-a-night guy. Last night against Boston, and what was kind of a crazy game, considering the Heat didn't have Jimmy Butler, high-scoring game, another 20-point effort for Adebayo, who played really well, particularly in the first half. I want to start here with the Heat. Again, we haven't really talked much about them this year. I talked about them a little bit before the season started about how I was just disappointed in their offseason. They didn't really do much. They stood mostly pat as other teams in the East have seemingly passed them by. We've seen that to an extent so far this season. Cleveland's been really good. Philly's also been dealing with injuries, but they're ahead of Miami in the standings. Obviously, we have Cleveland and Boston as well. What have you made of their season so far, Herring? Do you feel like this is an injury-ridden team that just needs Jimmy Butler to come back? Or are you like, just, I'm kind of over this whole era?
I think that they look, I'm holding out hope, expectations, whatever you want to call it, until Butler's back. I mean, the numbers, granted, at this point he's only played about half I guess maybe 60% of the season, 55% of the season. Their offense has been great when he's there. It's been really, really, really bad, like worst in the NBA bad when he's not on the court. So that's concerning, not just because, you know, for the obvious reasons, but also like he's not going to play 48 minutes a game for you. Mm-hmm. So my highest hope for them, if and when Butler's not there, as it all often is with teams, I have the same hope for Minnesota now, that Towns is going to miss considerable time. It gives other guys a chance to grow.
Mm-hmm.
But I do worry, as I always do with Miami-type teams that play the way they play, that guys are potentially going to get hurt. Kyle Lowry in particular, with all the minutes he's playing, I worry about at age 36. So, you know, I see room and I see certain guys growing. Caleb Martin is among those guys, putting the ball on the floor more. His scoring has been up lately.
Mm-hmm.
Bam has certainly taken, you know, a step forward as far as his aggression and that little kind of flippy floater jumper that he takes from right at the top of the paint that looks really good for him. But look, if Butler were to miss considerable time this year, like going forward, they're not doing anything. Like this team doesn't have enough offense. It's very clear that they don't. They get exploited defensively when they're in anything other than a zone, which is leading to them playing the most zone we've essentially ever seen in our lifetime, or at least, you know, in modern, you know, modern time since you and I have been covering the league.
Yeah.
They're just getting slapped up relentlessly. Some of that has to do with their switching. So I don't trust this team a whole lot without Jimmy. Even with Jimmy, I think that there are some things they need to figure out defensively. Maybe they'd be better at point of attack. Maybe they could play man more often with Jimmy there. But there's some stuff that I don't see him fixing, quite frankly. And, you know, he's a great, great player. But, like, if they're expecting him to fix all this, and I can't imagine that that's the hope even. Like, I don't even think Eric Spoelstra has that expectation. So there's some stuff that's wrong with them beyond Jimmy Butler that, you know, I'm not used to having to say that about a Miami Heat team, certainly not a Miami Heat defense.
Yeah, you mentioned, you know, their half-court offense last year was a slog. I don't think anyone expected it to be better this year. But, you know, they won a lot of games last year, even when Jimmy was hurt, Bam was hurt. They had an incredible three-point shooting stretch last year in, like, December, January. Their three-point shooting, they led the league in percentage last year. They've kind of fallen off a cliff there. Tyler Hero, who's had his own injury issues, like, Hero has been weird. I think he was, like, shooting under 30% on catch-and-shoot threes, which is kind of shocking. Like, I know that there's a lot of discussion, and I've made a lot of jokes about Hero on this podcast, but that's an area of his game that's never been an issue. I mean, the guy can shoot. And
if
things
there's
like
only
that,
one thing he can do, it's normally going to be that, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, obviously, like, I follow the team pretty closely. I'm from South Florida. We haven't made any... We even hid that on this podcast. Something that's crazy to me about the Heat, you mentioned the amount of zone. It's a double-edged sword. On one hand, you know, up until this Boston game Wednesday night, they had crept up top 10 defensively.
They were.
As you mentioned, playing a ton of zone. Like, it's been incredibly effective. Cooper Moorhead, who works for the team, writes about the Heat. He does a fantastic job.
He's
almost
great.
I love Coop, man. And after every game, he'll basically tweet out the points per possession versus the zone versus man. And every night the zone is frankly dominant, but you mentioned it. The fact that they can't play man, it's like sometimes I watch the team and I respect Spo, and it shows his competitiveness that he's willing to play zone as much as he is. Like, he literally is like, whatever it takes to win a single game, I am going to do it. Whatever strategy thing it is. But you watch them and you're like, how is it that a team with Bam Adebayo, with Kyle Lowry, with Caleb Martin is so theoretically weak defensively at these other spots that they're playing this much zone? It's like, think about a team like the Houston Rockets or the Detroit Pistons, like, or the Denver Nuggets. I mean, granted, these teams, I guess they don't have good defenses, but like, the idea that the Heat are, their personnel is so bad that they can't man up is kind of crazy to me. It's like, you watch the games and it's like, you really can't play man defense? Like, that's how bad it's gotten?
Yeah. I mean, and here's the thing, because I understand it theoretically, if you've got your whole roster there, and also let's be honest, like they were struggling on defense more before they resorted to going to zone. They're going for clarity, they're going zone 30% of the time.
Yeah.
The next closest team, as recently as I looked, was Portland, which was going zone 16% of the time.
Yeah, they are a zone team. Like, they are a zone team.
Like, they're playing zone at times half the game. And like you alluded to, the numbers are so stark. They're basically like a top three or four defense in the league when on zone possessions. They're like a bottom two or three defense in the league when they play man. So that's the challenge here. You would think that you could get away with playing man more frequently because of Bam. I this morning, as I knew we were going to podcast about Miami, was thinking like how aggressively highly in the, you know, the defensive player of the year conversation can you have someone like Bam if you can't play man and like succeed playing man? You've got to play some man, like even just to kind of make the impact a lot of times that you want a player like that to make, you have to play man. And the truth is, I think teams are excited when the Heat play man because you're going to switch. You're going to have to switch to just avoid guys taking advantage of some of the guys defensively with Miami. So Bam ends up kind of switched on to somebody else and it leaves, you know, if he's at the top of the key, it leaves the backside wide open and nobody is really afraid of anybody else on their defense to try to shoot over. So that causes problems, but still for a team that hasn't even necessarily had Duncan Robinson out there a whole lot, Hero's missed what, 8-9 games. Robinson's missed the last like 6 or 7. The guys that would be easiest to pick on this defense have not even been fully healthy. So like, it's not those two guys alone. Whereas like the last couple of years, you could have kind of pointed to that.
Right.
Duncan Robinson, even when he does play, is not playing 35 minutes a game.
Right.
So it's really puzzling. I make an effort to try to listen to podcasts, read around. It's been really interesting too, to hear how many people that cover the Heat have kind of felt like, maybe Spo's not getting through the way he always has, or that guys like aren't, you know, I don't know if it's not that they're not playing as hard. It's really interesting though, because we've seen the Heat land in the top 10 defensively now, I think 6 out of the last 7 years, and maybe they get there this year, but if you have to do it by playing zone almost half the time, it's just a weird, I know Butler's out. I know Butler's a very good defender. I know that certain things can and will improve in some ways, but it's really strange. It's just an unusual sort of problem to see for the Heat.
It is. It's a weird team. It's a really weird team. I mean, Haywood Highsmith, the roller coaster Heat fans have been on with Haywood Highsmith, who hit a bunch of shots last night and for a time was looking like the worst offensive rotational player in the NBA. Drew Smith is playing major minutes in a game against the Hawks, like getting fourth quarter minutes. He's a two-way guy. Udonis Haslem plays last night. Gabe Vincent, who's a really important reserve for them, has missed a bunch of time. He finally came back
right
in the Boston game. So it's really just been a cobble together team. I do think Jimmy helps a lot. You know, I think one thing Heat fans would point to, it's like Jimmy Butler, Caleb Martin, and Bam Adebayo. That trio, you know, there was a lot of focus on Caleb Martin this year. He's kind of the PJ Tucker replacement. He's been really fantastic. And you mentioned the opportunity for him to grow. I think he was really seized these last couple weeks without Butler, and has become, you can see the growth of him as a player. You mentioned off the ball, transition. The Butler, Adebayo, Jimmy trio has been really good. I think they're like a plus 17 net. That's a positive. You look at that and say, that's really good. On the other hand, it's like, yeah, most teams, even the bad ones, have like a good trio. Like your best right. players should play really well together.
Bulls.
But. Yeah.
Sorry. Exactly. I feel like everybody,
a rare friend,
former friend of the pod, Michael Pina.
Former. Emphasis on former.
Took a sledgehammer to the Bulls. Like, I think he was a little overly critical in spots, but like by and large, and I mean, people have been saying it, other prominent podcasters have been saying it. If you can't perform well with your three best guys, which, you know, granted, like the Lakers are obviously another team that has had this conversation. Stuff has looked better lately, but like you really don't have much chance at contending for anything. And probably even comfortably contending for a playoff spot if your best three guys cannot play together or don't play well together. So, you know, Miami, they, when they're whole, if they were to still be struggling this way, you know, Spo, to give you a sense of what it's been up until recently. And I also mentioned this, they've had of their last 17 games now, they've like lost two and then come back and won two.
Yeah, they've been really streaky.
Won three and then, you know, lost three, you know, lost three and then won four. It's been like that now for 17 games in a row. I don't think that they've had, you know, like that they've traded off games one and then the other, one result and then the other. So stuff will level out. But I mean, it's a little bit crazy, even with all the injuries and everything, to hear about Spo having his first, you know, 0-4 road trip.
Yeah.
As coach, it's really weird to see them be a team that is one of the three or four worst at guarding man, you know, and man. The offense is really bad, which is granted again with Butler, but they did plug Tyler Hero into their starting lineup to give them more of an offensive punch. So it's been a weird year, and stuff will level out a little bit, but even if Butler's really good, which I imagine he will be if and when he, you know, comes back and he's healthy. But I would caution against the idea of thinking that like he's a fix-all. I don't think he is.
You know, you mentioned the man thing. It is interesting, and you touched on this. I wrote about this. Part of the thing is you mentioned they switched so much. They kind of had to get away from that to keep Bam involved defensively. Teams have gotten really smart about getting Bam out of the play. You see perimeter scorers going away from him, not calling him into switches. If they get Bam on a switch, they go elsewhere with the ball. One thing that the zone has done is it keeps Bam in the paint. Yes. It keeps him engaged defensively. They started to mix in a little bit right before Jimmy got hurt, mixing in some drop. They were playing drop against the Suns, which was a nice win for them, and it looked like it could have been a turning point. Then they go on this road trip without Butler, and kind of the whole team falls apart. So it's interesting. I do think they seem to be competing. I mean, they're also in a ton of close games. They lead the league in clutch games.
Yes.
Yeah.
Good to point out.
Yeah, they're 10-12, and like I think they're close to 500 in clutch games, and that's typically how it should be. But you look at, you know, if they sneak out that overtime win against the Wizards, or that Wolves game is really close, like they have a couple games that, you know, with really barren squads, you know, we're talking playing the majority undrafted and two-way players. If they squeak out a couple of those, I think the whole tenor of the season looks different. You're looking at, the Heat are 12-10, but they've missed Jimmy for all this time. So,
right. It's a very good point. Yeah. I do think it's interesting, by the way. I mentioned this in my piece that, I mean, as of right now, and I haven't looked at certain stuff in the last day or two since I wrote that piece, but the fact that the Heat now are 2-9, I think it is, or 2-8 or whatever it is on the road. And the fact that of the other three finalists, you've obviously got Boston, conference finalists, you've got Boston, who's like wrecking the league. But then you've got Golden State, who has a worse road record than Miami. And obviously you've got Dallas, who also, I think, has a worse road record than Miami. So it's really strange that you've got three contenders, at least from last season, you know, that literally the conference finalists, and three of them are all like 5, 6 games, 7 games under 500 to start a season on the road. Three of the last teams to win a road game, essentially, in the NBA. So it's been a really strange season. Also, just look at the road records in the league this year. Yeah. You've only got like, what, 8 or 9 that have winning road records so far. Mm-hmm. Like most teams are just abysmal on the road. So it's been a very, very, very strange season so far.
Yeah. You know, I touched on this in the Monday show. It's just also been a weird season, and I feel like I still have not been able to get my bearings or make sense of what's real or what's not real yet.
Right. Taking a little bit longer this year, it feels like.
It is. And, you know, I do think the Heat, generally, I don't think they're going to be a great team necessarily. I think they'll be pretty good if and when Butler returns, although you do have to have some fear about that knee holding up, the knee that maybe bothered him in the playoffs.
Was he now 33?
Yeah, he's getting up there. But, I mean, he was having, again, I think, another fantastic season this year before the injury. You know, he had that great block on Devin Booker, and it really looked like it was going to be kind of that spark plug moment for the team. Victor Oladipo, who knows what they can count on from him, but he's practicing fully now. It's just crazy to think, like, between, you know, they've already missing Yurtsevin. They were counting on him. Oladipo. They've had games where they've missed Hero, Vincent, Robinson, Jimmy. They're down six NBA players, and it's like
that Washington game you pointed out. They had seven guys and ran out there with seven suited up seven guys.
Yeah.
Played all seven of them and lost by one on the road. Yeah. So it's you raise a good point to say they've had a lot of close games. I had the number in my story that they've had the second most guys like lose games to injury.
Yeah.
I think only Orlando has had more so far. So it's like there is reason for optimism. I just again think that you don't want to lean so heavily on, oh, because we were missing this and this, that you don't have other problems. This team has some problems that Miami Spo teams have not really had. So it'll be interesting to see how they work their way out of it.
And to that point, I want to get to this because I think we both agree, like, their ceiling is better than what they are now. At the same time, they're clearly a cut below Boston and Milwaukee. And I think we all thought Boston was better than them last year. At the same time, we saw Miami push them in a playoff series. We saw them push them a little bit Wednesday night, but I think the gap is widened. You know, Miami was, I think, a much more serious threat to make the finals last year than this year, based on what we've seen so far. Is there a player, you know, I'm not saying, let's add Bradley Beal to this team. I'm putting you on the spot a little bit here, but
okay.
Is there a type of player or a player that you think they can add that could help close the gap a little bit? You know, is it, you know, I went on a Heat podcast and I was like, God, they got to be kicking themselves. They didn't like maybe try to figure out a way to get Jeremy Grant in the summer. I mean, every team
in the league could say that. He looks great so far.
He's been awesome. But does Jay Crowder move the needle? Is there anyone who you think that they can – what's the type of player they should be looking for in your estimation?
That's who I was going to mention. I mean, a Grant or somebody like that over the summer would have moved the needle, I think, for a lot of teams. Hell, we've said that about Portland for years now, that like that sort of player could move the needle for them. And all of a sudden you took Portland and you had a team that – was probably not athletic enough, certainly defensively, not long enough. They had to give up a painful piece of their core to really make that roster look different in CJ McCollum. They finally did it. They went out and got Jeremy Grant, and like the whole team looks different. They still have some of the same problems. Anybody that watched them the other night saw Anthony Simons just get lit up and not look, have a great game. You know, offensively hit a bunch of threes, but just not, you know, he's not well-rounded enough by himself to run the show all the time, or at least, you know, defensively. Dame's not great defensively either, but like he's not as porous in some ways. Anyway, Jeremy Grant was a great pickup. I think Crowder gets you back to some of the stuff that you could do that frankly now is lost with them not having PJ Tucker. And it's weird to kind of harp on that given that PJ Tucker, you know, it's you hear
there are Twitter accounts dedicated to asking if PJ Tucker scored tonight.
They're probably Twitter accounts dedicated to whether he's shot the ball on given nights. Like he took a shot last night and everybody was like, oh, he took a shot. And then the next time the ball came to him, he was arguably even more wide open than the time before and still found a way to pass it off. So and keep in mind, that's for a team that is lacking like two of its three best scorers. So he might not. You know, maybe we're harping too much on like what PJ Tucker was last year. He's starting to get older too, but you'd still need somebody with like that rugged nature who can play some four, occasionally some five for you. And, you know, Crowder, I don't know if he's going to play a lot of five, but he could give you some of that rugged four. He's, you know, we all know at this point he's overrated as a shooter, but like he's a good enough shooter. His threat level in the NBA in terms of the way he's perceived is good enough to where he could, you know, he could help you if he's healthy. So frankly a little bit surprised that no team has really made, I'm sure they made the call, but to actually do something. But, you know, we'll see what happens. Maybe we're harping on this too much given that Butler's not there, but I do kind of feel like that's an area where they could benefit because they've been playing Jovic and a lot of other people that just are, like you were saying about Highsmith, a lot of guys that like are either very young or guys that don't really have,
just not ready. They're not ready. They have potential, right, but they're not ready.
And they've done this, you know, I kind of get it, because Miami, if there's one team in the league that has thrived off that, not playing guys that aren't ready, but playing guys that have like no NBA seasoning, it's Miami, who, if you look back at that game that we're talking about against Washington, where they had seven guys, five of them were undrafted, I think. Mm-hmm. And you know, these are guys that now have real roles with them, whether we're talking about Strus or Martin or Vincent. So they've made it work before, but it's after a while, it's like, how do I put this? If you can kind of rig stuff and kind of jerry-rig stuff in your apartment for long enough, maybe you're going to feel like you don't eventually have to go to the store to buy something. But like at some point you have to buy something, because like your stuff is going to fall apart. And particularly if Jimmy Butler's not there. And that's kind of how this feels. When you have to use zone 30% of the time because man is failing that often. That's kind of how this feels.
For sure. I want to move on, but real quick before we do, I just want to ask, because you know, I did write about it, and I think the one bright spot has been Bam, who's been fantastic. You know, he's turned into a 2010 guy, which I think people have been waiting for. The unassisted shots are way up. I mean, I was really surprised to see him have, you know, Anthony Davis, for example. He's more unassisted makes than Anthony Davis, or percentage-wise, more Anthony than Anthony Davis this year, which, to Anthony Davis's credit, realizing, hey, wait, why am I taking these stupid jumpers when I can dominate in the pick and roll and at the free throw line?
Right.
But, you know, we've seen kind of that next offensive evolution for Bam. I had so much fun talking to him. I told him the block on Tatum was one of the best nights of my life. What have you made of his play specifically? I feel like there's always this weird, like, oh, is he good enough to be the second guy on a championship team? And, you know, first of all, he was on a team that made the finals. Last year's team, I don't think it's an indictment of him that they didn't make the NBA finals. And just defensively, everything that he does for the – it's hard to measure the amount of things they ask Bam to do on a given night. I honestly think few players in the NBA are asked to do more, but what do you make of him and kind of the offensive improvement you've seen so far this season?
I mean, he's looked solid, and it's crazy because I don't think, like, I'd have to look. I don't think it's clearly spelled out in like the big, bold, traditional counting stats necessarily. You'd have to watch the games to see where he's taking the shots from, how often he's doing that, some of the moves, the counters. And not just that, but I think also recognizing that Miami was such a three-point dependent team that frankly hasn't shot well this year. They were at the top of the league in handoffs, you know, handoff efficiency. When you look at guys like Duncan Robinson and all the, you know, all the undrafted guys we've talked about that really thrive, shoot 35-40% from three, that just aren't doing that. And so how much more difficult that theoretically makes Bam's job if those guys aren't hitting shots, he's got way less room to operate with. Not to mention that Butler hasn't been there. Putting up those stats without Butler being there, without Hero playing well, without, you know, all these things is a huge accomplishment. And it speaks a lot to his aggression, which I think, again, if Jimmy didn't play another game this year, they wouldn't go very far. But I do think that it would, you know, his progression is probably the best thing to come out of this for the team. And I actually think for other guys, too, as I was saying earlier, but mostly for Bam, because I actually think some of what he's doing, it's not even necessarily like, you know, could he be a second guy on a championship team? At some point, you know, he's young enough where he could still develop into like the best scorer on that sort of team, just with a different collection of players. And a team that, you know, that had a little bit more offense around it. That's how he's starting to look to me, which maybe that's overstating it just a little bit, but he's that good. He has that much
talent.
No,
keep going. I just want to say, in all seriousness, I love Bam. I love the competitiveness, man. And talking to, you know, I told you the story. Now I'll just, when I interviewed Eric Swosser for this story, he made it very clear that he was like, not a lot of people get it with Bam. And it's just, it's, the franchise is very protective of him because I think they see, like, the people focus so much on his scoring, and the point they try to get across is just how important he is. I love Bam. I love how much the disdain he has for the Celtics. He told me, you know, before game three of the Eastern Conference Finals, he had one of the best games of his career. He was like, I don't know if it was all the bleeping green, but I was pissed. Like, just last night he gets the tech, or Wednesday he got ejected. He gets the tech at the end of the game. Yeah.
Yeah.
He said he called the refs decorum unprofessional. So he's but this is good. He's acting like a number one guy. I always tell the story. There's this show on Netflix called Sacred Games, and it's a Hindi TV show, and the bad guy in it is this Indian guy, and he's like a gold pistol, and he's like a drug dealer, and I'm like, they've never let us do this on TV before. This is sick. He's acting the part. Bam is acting the part this year, and I really enjoy that. Before we get out of here today, there's one more team I'd like to talk about. This is a team both of us have written about a lot the last couple years, a team that I also wrote about this week. So I realize I'm just plugging my stories today. I appreciate Aaron humoring me.
Go with it. Go with it.
But I wrote, I reported this story last month about the Denver Nuggets. And I thought the moves they made in the offseason, bringing in Bruce Brown, bringing in KCP, were home run moves. And I was excited to write this piece because they've worked. Like, KCP is, do you know what his 3-point percentage is? I don't think you'd know the exact number off the top of your head, but do you want to take a guess?
I actually don't know. And I
49.5.
I was going to guess like 42, but
he is,
wow. He's basically doing what Herter was doing, yeah, that we talked about, yeah, last time. Yeah. Wow.
He is shooting almost 50% from three. Bruce Brown, contenders should have been lining up to sign Bruce Brown in the summer. And I think teams reached out, but he should have been a priority for teams like the Lakers, the Warriors. I mean, you name it. The Nets. Oh, my. No, it's true. You know, everyone thought his 3-point shooting, he's getting wide open shots, it's a fluke. This year, higher volume, over three attempts a game, still shooting 40% from three.
He's shooting exactly the same as last year, 404 versus 403. Yeah.
And I could tell he was excited when I talked to him. He's like, I get to play guard again. You know, he said that to me in October. This week he said, I'm sending a message to a lot of NBA GMs that I could play guard. I've already seen chatter, you know, local Denver writers, shout out to Mike Singer. They're worried they're not going to keep Bruce Brown past this year. They think he's already outplayed his contract. He is a player option.
He has an option. I forgot about that. Oh, wow. Yeah. Good for him.
Yeah. I mean, Michael Malone called him a foxhole guy. Like, they love him. Their starting lineup, this is really where it gets interesting, Herring. Their starting lineup, out of all lineups that have played 170 minutes together so far this season, the Nuggets starting five is the best defensive rating in the NBA.
Yep.
Of 170 minutes.
It's a little shocking, right?
Yeah. The second best net rating overall, behind only the Warriors starting five. You know, the defense overall still, frankly, hasn't been very good. It's good enough with Jokic on the floor. I think part of that has to do with, you know, figuring out the right lineups. I think Jamal Murray's been a step slow. I think as he improves, their defense is going to improve across multiple lineups. But I was big on these moves. They're second in the West, one game out of first place. I believe they're number seven in net rating. The West is weird. I mean, we've talked about them quite a bit, but the top of the West especially still does not make a lot of sense. Where do you feel the Nuggets fit into that hierarchy? Do you think this is the Joker's best chance to make the finals?
I'm going to say yes, actually. That's a good framing of the question. I'm going to say yes, partly because the numbers kind of show that, but I'm going to say more so because there's not like another clear-cut team outside of maybe Phoenix, who for obvious reasons, we don't trust Phoenix that much just yet. You know, it's hard to trust anything that, you know, does what they did in game seven last year. So I'm going to say yes, based on that. I'm going to say that I've still got plenty of questions for them. I'm going to say that they need to be really serious about the idea of trying to make a move to bolster the roster further, to take advantage of the fact that there's no reason they shouldn't finish as a top two seed in the West. I understand the seeding isn't everything. I understand that, you know, Golden State could make it as a play-in and they would still be, you know, one of the teams that everybody's afraid of here or thinking about in the back of their mind after last year. It's going to be a weird year, though, based on the standings, where if Kawhi and Paul George start playing every night, once the playoffs hit and the Clippers role guys kind of find a rhythm, all of a sudden the seeding stuff doesn't matter much. But I will say that the Nuggets have the stuff. They certainly are going to have enough offense.
They've beaten Kawhi and PG before.
Right. They have more than enough offense to do it. And that's, again, with certain guys knocking off the rust and really starting to look that way, too, by the way. The defense is putting up good enough numbers. There are certain matchups that are much better for the Nuggets that even at full strength, I don't love them against Golden State. You know, maybe Golden State's changes will make it a little bit easier for the Nuggets, and the Nuggets changes maybe make it a little bit easier for them to compete in a series like that. But there is like a move or two I'd like to see them make that I think would bolster them a little bit before we, you know, we talk about them as the team out of the West or one of the teams out of the West.
That's interesting. Yeah, I do think that they are better equipped than ever before. I straight up asked Bruce Brown. I was like, you know, I remember the Rockets a few years ago built their entire team around defending the Warriors. Do you think you need to do something the same? Something similar. And they were playing the Warriors that night, I believe. And he's like, you know, we're not there yet. That's not really our goal. Like, we want to, you know, they're a new team. They kind of
good answer, Bruce. You do remember him. Was it last year?
Against
the
Celtics. Yeah, it was this summer.
The
where he
wildest
said,
answer take, I've ever heard a role player give. Crazy.
I love it. I loved it.
He was
I loved
like,
it.
Yeah, shout they out to got Bruce Brown. Robert Williams out. We're gonna take advantage now. What, fam? Shut up. You don't get to say that. Jokic wouldn't get to say that. You don't get to say it. KD, and I think KD even said right after, he's like, fam, hush.
Yeah.
So yeah. I mean, shout out to him taking the not the high road, but giving the
a little more diplomatic answer. But
he's right, though, that they should wait, you know, a little bit.
But point being, they beat Golden State in the second game of the season without Jamal Murray. Bruce Brown started that game. I do think they have more guys to throw at Steph now. They're better. You know, those three guard lineups absolutely blitz Denver. They haven't been as good for Golden State this year, but the Nuggets themselves are better equipped to deal with those kinds of groups because of Bruce Brown, because of KCP in a way that they weren't in years before. And, I mean, you mentioned a team like the Clippers. I don't think the Clippers are certainly going to be an easy out. I think they could certainly beat the Nuggets in a playoff series. I do think Denver, again, is the best position they've been to deal with a team like the Clippers. You know, the fact that they can play Brown, Aaron Gordon, and KCP together on the wing now, I think is going to make a significant difference for them. Come playoff time, I mean, if that group defensively has not been great so far this season, I still think it has potential in a playoff series. It's interesting. You know, part of my framing going to the story was Jokic has won MVP two times in a row. The only guy to have won, other player to have won at least two MVPs and never make the finals is Steve Nash. You think about guys like Giannis, LeBron, around this age, they're all either making and or winning titles.
Right.
You know, Calvin Booth told me, he's like, I'm not necessarily feeling that pressure. I think, you know, the players have a more difficult job than I do. But I do think that they kind of... And so far, they are doing it. Take advantage of the fact that they have a talent like Jokic. You mentioned that you think they're still a move away. What do you feel like maybe they're lacking still?
You know, one of the most interesting players in the league this year to me, and not even just this year, but I think last couple of years, has been Jakob Poeltl, who he's played for a couple different teams now. He's with the team now that's in the middle of a rebuild that, frankly, at this point, I think we're all of the opinion like anybody could potentially be on the table after we saw them trade DeJounte Murray, who normally would be the kind of guy you would build around. So if you're not and you're trading him away for the sorts of assets they got back, Jakob Poeltl could be had, presumably. He's been one of the best rim protectors in the league for a while. He's been scoring a little bit better this year. I think he had a 30-point game, 30-some point game last week. He's an efficient player. I mean, he does have flaws. He can't shoot free throws. You know, there are probably certain types of centers in the league that could take advantage of him. But just the fact that I think, you know, some of the problems that we've talked about with Denver, some of the problems we were talking about with Miami in terms of the way that if you play them a certain way and force them to rotate a certain way and kind of throw multiple passes or kind of swing the ball, and Jokic comes up as high as he does defensively. Jokic is a much better defender than he's been given credit for in the past. I think now we're kind of at a point where maybe it's gone in the other direction.
Yeah, but there are also matchups that are bad for him, like Golden State. Yes.
Exactly. And so with that in mind, I kind of wonder if Poeltl's the sort of big that you could probably play with Jokic, but also the kind of big that could back him up. I mean, again, I think Poeltl would cost a decent amount now compared to 2 years ago. He probably could have been had for, you know, if you go back and look, I think he was part of that Kawhi trade at this point.
Yeah.
So he's been you know, in San Antonio for a while now. But I think his perception of a player has improved. And I do wonder what it would take to get him. But I think a player like him could really fit that team. I also don't think that DeAndre Jordan is going to be, you know, a guy that you really want to run out there too much in the playoffs. So I think that for that reason, Poeltl could be a player that would make a lot of sense for them. I also think that they might, you know, be another wing player. You know, having another solid wing player as part of their rotation could be helpful too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I will say that DeAndre Jordan did not exactly make my piece about Denver's offseason, even though I know that someone they were excited to bring in, and I think I do think in ways he's probably looked better in Denver than he has in some of his last other few stops.
He has.
Yeah, man, it's interesting. I do think that Poeltl, you hear his name attached to a lot of contenders, and rightfully so. He's one of the more underrated centers in the league. Absolutely could work for them defensively. I mean, he'd immediately be the best backup center in the league, I think. It's like him and Hartenstein dueling it out for that. But I think, and you mentioned, the beauty of Jokic is he can really play next to a variety of bigs. You don't have to worry about spacing. I don't think you have to worry about your offense as much. He's absolutely someone who I think could play alongside him. So I think that's very interesting if they're looking for a size, more size or a different look. Yeah, I'm just excited. I'm glad that they very clearly recognized what they needed in the offseason. I thought it was interesting Calvin Booth saying, he's like, the formula is not complicated. He's like, it's copycat league. And it's like, he's right. It's like, you need shooting and defense around your stars, and you just need those guys to have shooting and defense in a way that fits around your best players, right? So the Bucks, they have shooters, they have defenders, but you know, they might need more ball handling next to Giannis so he can be setting screens. You look at the Warriors, they need shooting and defense, but they need guys who know how to move the ball and cut and play in a motion offense that's not, you know, standing in a quarter waiting for a pass. And I think the Nuggets were like, we need guys who are ready to, they're catch and shoot, second best catch and shoot team in the league. It's like, we need guys who are ready to, you know, play off Joker. And defend, you know, make up for some of his defensive limitations. And I think that they've done a better job of that this year than in the past.
It was part of what made, to me, like, I still say, I know I said this that week of free agency, and I would still stand by it. I think he was the most sensible signing, value signing that I saw in the entire league during the offseason, because if you wanted to roll the dice on the idea that his shooting was real as far as the improvements that we saw last year, okay, that was a worthwhile gamble on its own, maybe. But just the idea of fitting your personnel, someone that is just a devastating cutter and a really smart player who kind of fits into these crevices and kind of, you know, back cuts teams that aren't paying enough attention. I mean, somebody like that playing with Jokic is just can have a field day and has had a field day with that offense. And that's not to even mention the idea that he can handle a little bit, you know, probably not someone you want really as your primary guy, but can defend the way that he does. And for a team that desperately needed more defense, particularly with Michael Porter and Jamal Murray coming back, you needed that. So it doesn't surprise me that they've looked solid. I don't think that mission is accomplished yet, you know, and I don't think they would say that either, but they're intriguing. And this is what you were hoping for if you were Denver's, to at least be in that conversation as a team a quarter of the way, halfway through the season, to kind of at least allow you to figure out how in this are we, as far as how we look and where we're at. And Murray has certainly started to come around, and you know, and Michael Porter obviously always has that jump shot, you know, regardless of how much he's struggling on defense. So they're looking the part. And I'm curious to see what happens now as we get through the last parts of the season.
We know MPJ loves certain shots. Chris.
Wow. Took me a second to catch that. We love certain shots. We know there are other ones he doesn't like as much. Selective.
But I'm high on this Nuggets team as I always am. And shout out to their front office because I think that they recognize the improvements that need to be made. And even if they're a move or two away, like their willingness, you know, I'm sure it was not easy training a guy like Monte Morris or, you know, they've moved Gary Harris in the past, but I think they've taken the right swings at making this team. And I think the West is wide open. While the West is wide open, that closes today's episode. I don't know if that segue fully works.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, brother. Wow.
No.
Even if that doesn't close today's episode, that should close today's. That was horrible.
That was rough. Wow. That rough.
Bad. That was as bad as me not picking up on the Michael Porter Jr., him liking shots or disliking. I didn't pick up on that for like 2 minutes. That was equally bad. I'm sorry.
All right. I'm glad that we both had major, awkward, and uncomfortable mistakes on this podcast. Chris, that'll do it for today's episode. Always great to chop it up with you, my man. Shout out to our producer, Shelby. We will try to get you guys a Rip City Royston Report soon. I know people have been clamoring for it in the emails. Please keep your emails coming. openformail@gmail.com. And until the next episode, please continue to enjoy the NBA season. Whoa.
How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.